We're looking now at Genesis chapter 9. Genesis chapter 9. As I turn there, I see my little card of the Blooms. It was great to have them with us last weekend as they prepare to go to Germany. And I told Teresa I'm going to stick this in my Bible so I remember to pray for you guys. It's working so far. We got to see them Friday as we were up in Beaver Falls for a wedding, and Teresa chopped her hair off so she could donate it. So she already looks different from this. That was kind of took me back. But please be praying for the Blooms, as this can be quite a transition as they give up much to serve Christ in the way that he has called them. And so we ask you to pray for them as they came and presented to us the ministry that they hope to participate in Germany. Genesis chapter 9, verses 1 through 17, is the core of the sermon text. We will be handling some other verses around this, but allow me to read this to you. I'll be reading from the Modern English Version. Then God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Every beast of the earth and every bird of the sky and all that moves on the earth and all the fish of the sea will fear you and be terrified of you. They are given into your hand. Every moving thing that lives will be food for you. I give you everything, just as I gave you the green plant. Only you shall not eat flesh with its life, that is, its blood. But for your own lifeblood I will surely require a reckoning. From every animal will I require it. Of man too will I require a reckoning for human life. Of every man for that of his fellow man. Whoever sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed, for God made man in his own image. And as for you, be fruitful and multiply, increase abundantly in the earth and multiply in it." Again, God spoke to Noah and to his sons with him, saying, "As for me, I establish my covenant with you and with your descendants after you and with every living creature that is with you, the birds, the livestock, and every beast of the earth with you, of all that comes out of the ark, every beast of the earth. I establish my covenant with you. Never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of a flood. Never again shall there be a flood to destroy the earth." Then God said, "This is the sign of the covenant which I am making between me and you and every living creature that is with you for all future generations. I have set my rainbow in the cloud, and it shall be a sign of a covenant between me and the earth. When I bring a cloud over the earth, the rainbow will be seen in the cloud. Then I will remember my covenant which is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh, and the waters will never again become a flood to destroy all flesh. The rainbow will appear in the cloud, and I will see it and remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is on the earth." So God said to Noah, "This is the sign of the covenant that I have established between me and all flesh that is on the earth. The grass withers and the flower fades, but the word of our God stands forever." We started in God's creation of man in Genesis and looking at how he established marriage and the family. And we've looked at some of the story of God's people that flows from that. And today we are looking post-flood at God's recreation, as it were, of the world. of his reestablishment of marriage and the family and the mission of his people on this earth. And there are six things that I want to draw out of the text for you. Hopefully I'm not drawing them so far as to be obscure and you to think, where is he getting this from? Hopefully it will be pretty plain as we go. Last time that we were together here, we looked at chapter 6, that God saw the wickedness of man, that it was great on the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was continually only evil. And so in this context of great and growing sin, God chose to intervene in such a way to preserve the godly seed, to preserve the line. There was a rapid growth of wickedness and vileness on the earth that threatened to overcome the church, God's people. And so God chose to step in and to destroy everything but his chosen remnant. And so the flood comes. God preserves these eight people, and the flood recedes. And as the waters draw away, we see firstly unbelievable destruction. Now, you perhaps grew up with a Bible or a Bible storybook that would depict for you life after the flood, and usually in a cartoonish fashion, and it always looks so pretty. You know, and there's the rainbow in the sky, and there's usually a dove floating around somewhere in the picture. But have you seen pictures of the Mississippi River Valley when it floods? Have you seen pictures of New Orleans after those levees broke? Remember even Nashville a number of years ago, as the waters flooded in. Various places on the earth have flooded since the Great Flood, and we can see just a glimpse of the damage and destruction that can take place. It's of note, if you're ever up in Pittsburgh, go downtown, and the older buildings in downtown Pittsburgh have little bronze plaques up on the wall. I think they're high enough you can't even reach them standing on the street, but you can look up and see them. And that's where the water was at one time. Not in prehistoric times, not during the Great Flood, but in recent memory, the point of Pittsburgh being completely covered. And even in those geographically specific places, when flooding comes in, we see the damage that the water does. How quickly an entire neighborhood can be swept away. How nature is strewn all around because of the moving power of the flood waters. And as the waters recede, we see the unbelievable destruction that came through God's redeeming his people by the flood. And let us be reminded, brothers and sisters, sin, the fruits of sin in our lives can be no less damaging and destroying today. The reason the flood had to happen was the wickedness of human hearts. And so we look and we say, of course, sin needed to be judged. It needed to be dealt with. But remember, the flood was a two-edged sword, if I can mix my metaphors and imagery here. There was the judgment of sin, but there was also the preserving nature of grace as God upheld His people on the waters of the flood. And let us be reminded not only of the destructive nature of sin, but the unbelievably destructive nature of grace. For when grace comes in, when the righteousness of Christ is applied to us, it must bring destruction. It must destroy our sinful flesh. It must break us down and rebuild us way more and way better than any drill sergeant ever could. It must bring destruction. Secondly, as the flood waters recede and we see the destruction of sin by grace of God, we see, secondly, unhindered worship. We see unhindered worship. Verse 15 of chapter 8 begins, "Then God spoke to Noah, saying, 'Go out of the ark, you and your wife and your sons' wives with you. Bring out with you every living thing of all flesh that is with you, birds and animals and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth, so that they may breed abundantly on the earth and be fruitful and multiply on the earth.' So Noah and his sons and his wife and his sons' wives went out, every beast, every creeping thing, every bird, and everything that moves on the earth according to their families went out of the ark. Then Noah built an altar to the Lord and took of every clean animal and of every clean bird, and offered burnt offerings on the altar. The Lord smelled a soothing aroma, and the Lord said in his heart, 'I will never again curse the ground because of man.'" This is a beautiful new covenant worship moment. The fullness and completeness of it. Every clean animal being sacrificed. There was a perfection there. But consider this. This is where imagination is necessary. I enjoyed Brother Edgar last week calling us to imagine this story of Abraham taking his son up the mountain. But imagine this. Have you ever been out in the quote-unquote middle of nowhere? We always refer to Sterling, Kansas as the middle of nowhere or the middle of everywhere, depending on how you look at it. But have you ever been out in that moment? We remember driving out across the Kansas plain at night, sometimes with no moon. It was a new moon, and only by starlight you could shut off your headlights and you could drive at night by the light of the stars. You can't even imagine here what it is like. But the reality is that even when you are alone in the wilderness of Kansas, nothing as far as the eye can see, eventually somewhere out there is someone. And they are sinning. But in this moment, there were only 8 people on the earth, and 100% of the earth's population was gathered in new covenant worship of the true and living God, praising Him for His salvation and for His grace. What a picture. See, what we have been praying for and longing for and working towards in the last 2,000 years, the believing the promise that the gospel will cover the earth as the waters cover the seas, God did in a month. He brought all human population under the sway of the gospel. And they were all gathered in worship. Everyone was there. There was no traffic to keep them from being there on time. They had for over a century as a family been building the ark, been worshiping God, and there had always been harassment. There had always been mocking. There had always been an embattled scenario revolving around their worship. And here, in this moment, God's people worshiped in peace. And we long for that day. We long for that day when the cares of the world have subsided and we experience for the first time completely unhindered worship of Christ. And we long for that day when it is face to face with Him. We've seen unbelievable destruction. We see unhindered worship. Thirdly, we see unending faithfulness. Unending faithfulness. The Lord said in His heart, I will never again curse the ground because of man. For the inclination of man's heart is evil from his youth, nor will I again destroy every living thing as I have done. These are pretty ridiculous statements to make if it was only a local flood. If it is not as Scripture tells us, somebody needs to tap God on the shoulder and say, not everything was destroyed. Not everybody was lost, but God knew what He had done, even if we refused to believe it in our generation. And He promised that never again would He do this. And remember this as you watch the news and read the paper and listen to C-SPAN radio. While the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter and day and night will not cease. You heard it here, folks. You heard it here. From the one who holds the universe in His hand. We need not panic. Now we need to be good stewards. We need to tend to this created order over which God has made us stewards, but we need not panic. We don't need to panic like we did in the 70s that an ice age is coming uncontrollably. We don't need to panic like we did in the 90s and 2000s that the earth is going to get so hot that everything is going to be destroyed. Remember just 10 years ago when a former vice president predicted that coastlands would be flooded because of global warming. Now, I know I'm a little more sarcastic than some, but I used to always say, and I say to this day, I'll believe that he believes what he's saying when he has a property group buying up property in Central Florida, because that will be the coastland, and we know how valuable coastal property is. But somehow the beach is still where the beach was a decade ago. It has not moved. You still go to Tampa. You still go to Miami. You don't go to Ocala or Orlando to go to the beach. God's unending faithfulness that we see every morning when the sun comes up, Every evening when the sun goes down, even if that evening and morning is 6 months long, as it is in some parts of the world on occasion, the sun still comes up and goes down. God's unending faithfulness in the smaller details of life. Here, as we see the Noahic covenant unfolding before our lives, we understand that the cosmic nature of the gospel comes down into the deep and particular details of our hearts and lives, and even of our experience. Every time a farmer in Kansas plants wheat or harvests wheat, every time they birth a calf or slaughter a cow, they are seeing the unending faithfulness of God, a God who keeps His word, and that is good because He has promised that He will not destroy the earth again by a flood. Fourthly, we see God's unbounded grace and supply. Then God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth." The first time this promise or this command had been given, humanity was in that sinless state of perfection. We had not yet fallen. And since then, a whole lot of garbage had taken place. And this time, when the command is given, it stands up next to the promise of Christ. It stands up next to the promise that the seed of the woman would come. See, the beauty of the flood and the beauty of Noah's family is not just that people were saved, but the beauty of it is that the righteous seed was saved. It was maintained so that Christ would still come as promised, the seed of the woman, to crush the head of the serpent. The unbounded grace of God and the unbounded supply. Every beast of the earth and every bird of the sky and all that moves on the earth and all the fish of the sea will fear you and be terrified of you. They are given into your hand. Now, this is what sets me apart from some of you. I think of my brother Andrew, who's a fisherman. See, the fish fear him, but they're actually given into his hand. They fear me, but they have yet to be given into my hand. I can't quite get that part to work. He can. And we all have friends who like to dress up and go out in the woods and come back with food. Given into our hand, the unbounded supply that God has given people to survive and be fed and be maintained, even bringing a certain honor upon the head of humanity again, reminding us that if someone is killed, that killer should be put to death. Why? Because God created man in His own image. When you mess with man, you're messing with God. You are messing with all that God was communicating by making man in His own image. You are messing with the message of the gospel, that the man would come and the man would lay down his life. He would shed his blood that we might be saved, that we might be able to fulfill these commands and obey them. He fulfills them, we obey them. Whoever sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed. For God made man in His own image, and as for you, be fruitful and multiply, increase abundantly in the earth and multiply in it. Fifthly, we see universal blessing. And again, God spoke to Noah, verse 8, and to his sons with him, saying, "As for me, I establish my covenant with you and with your descendants after you and with every living creature that is with you, the birds, the livestock, and every beast of the earth with you, of all that comes out of the ark, every beast of the earth, I establish my covenant with you. Never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of a flood. Never again shall there be a flood to destroy the earth." Remember, the creation groans under the weight and agony of fallen humanity. Creation cries, waiting for that day of full and final redemption. As the flood waters come in, the animals have every right to say, "What did we do? Why you got a beef with me?" The creation suffered. We see this in that unbelievable destruction. We see it in the fossils of all the animals that were destroyed and swept under the mud. We recognize this in human suffering. Just the other night, Emily and I were remembering with sorrow when that tornado came through Moore, Oklahoma, and it brought massive destruction. But none of the stories were sadder than the elementary school class that went down to the basement of their school as they were told to by emergency services to wait out the storm. And yet, in the midst of that storm, the exit was blocked and the basement flooded. Think of the families touched by that sorrow, knowing their child was in those waters, struggling for life and fighting for breath, and ultimately succumbed to the devastation around them. But friends, this is what happened to all of the created order. Our sin brought great destruction upon them, and they did not deserve it. And yet, as God brings this covenant with Noah, all of creation, in a certain sense, is considered in it. That even as God sends out these eight to be fruitful and to multiply and increase in the earth, even though God has already noted that the inclination of the human heart is to sin, there are many who want to have no children, or perhaps only one or two, because of the wickedness of the world. Don't be so concerned of that. Just know that your child will be wicked. Your child will be sinful. We know this. God knew this as He encouraged them to go and bear much fruit in the world. And yet, knowing that with the numbers of people, the sin would grow, God promises that He will not destroy His creation again by this means. By this means. And so here we see that the covenant of grace does bring with it that renewed sense of stewardship in the world for the sake of the gospel. Not caring for the earth just to care for the earth, but to care for the earth because it is the incubator of the truth of God. It is the place where we preach and where we hear and where we are redeemed. And lastly, we see that unmistakable sign. That unmistakable sign. Then God said, "This is the sign of the covenant which I am making between me and you and every living creature that is with you for all future generations. I have set my rainbow in the cloud, and it shall be a sign of a covenant between me and the earth. When I bring a cloud over the earth, a rainbow will be seen in the cloud. Then I will remember my covenant, which is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh. And the waters will never again become a flood to destroy all flesh. And let me address this when people say, well, does God need to be reminded of this? Does God need a string on his finger to remember? Friends, our God is consistent. Our God is faithful. He is not like us. If it were us, we would set a rainbow in the sky, and the next time we see it, would say, now what did I put that there for? You find these slips of paper in your office with a phone number on it. Thank the Lord for Google, that I can now punch that phone number in and find out who in the world I was supposed to call. My friend tells the story of the three sisters, 96, 94, and 92. And the one goes up to start her bath, and as she's getting in the bath, she stops and yells downstairs, "Was I getting in the bath or out of the bath?" And the 94-year-old rolls her eyes and says, "I'll come up and help you." And she gets halfway up the stairs and stops and says, "Was I going upstairs or coming downstairs?" And the 92-year-old huffs and says, "I hope I never get that senile, knock on wood. Hold on, I'll be there to help as soon as I answer the front door." That is us. That is our mind. Let us not be disturbed or distraught, because every time God sets the rainbow in the sky, he brings to mind, he brings to our memories the fact that he is a faithful God who fulfills the gospel of grace. He does not forget. He doesn't have a lapse of memory. At no point does he start to operate as if the gospel does not stand and say, "No, wait a minute, what was I doing? Oh yeah, let me back up here. Let me get back on track." That is our existence, but it is not the existence of our God, who is faithful, who is certain, who is undeterred in fulfilling his promise that the gospel will stand, that he will not destroy the earth again by water. He will not destroy all flesh. That he will preserve that gospel seed. And now, what encouragement can I bring to our families, to ourselves, to our own homes, in light of this? You would think that after a universal flood, Noah's family would be pretty keen to avoid sin. But the chapter doesn't even finish before the wickedness of humanity bubbles up to the surface again. But it bubbles up to the surface with the promise of the gospel looming larger than ever for God's people. The reminder that God would rather destroy the earth than to allow the seed of the woman to be destroyed. The reminder that God is consistent and faithful and true and keeps his word. So be encouraged, parents with wayward children. Be encouraged that God is faithful and he fulfills his promises. Be encouraged, those who have lost children, knowing that God is a faithful God, and that no matter what happens, all of the death and all of the mourning, he was faithful to bring that seed of the woman, to bring Christ who saves. Let us be reminded, Trinity. Let us be reminded, families and singles, bachelors and widows, that God has encouraged us to be fruitful and multiply. A promise that takes on new meaning in the covenant of grace. That yes, the fruits of our wombs should be many, if possible. But the fruits of our labors in the gospel should also be many. You might be single. You might be, as was said of Abraham and Sarah, as good as dead, and perhaps the way of the woman has gone from you. But that does not mean you cannot be fruitful for the kingdom. Through discipleship, through evangelism, through prayer, through worship, through encouragement, through blessing. Let us be fruitful and multiply, knowing that God's promises stand sure. That the promise of the covenant of grace, that God is saving a people for himself, stands true to this day, because the Son came up and the sun will go down. Horses across the street are being born and horses are dying. Up the road, they're planting Milo and they're harvesting Milo. The faithfulness of our God in the gospel is evident all around us. Let us work diligently to be fruitful and to multiply in our own hearts, in our marriages, in our families, in our church, in our community, in our nation, in the world. Let us obey the commands of God, knowing that we live under the blessing and promise of God. Stand with me as we pray.